Good evening.
Good evening, Hanok.
How are you, Jasmine?
Good, and you?
Baruch Hashem. You have any questions for tonight?
Not really.
Okay. Well, let's see who else comes.
Okay. So how's everything for you?
Baruch Hashem, things are good.
That's good to know.
How about you, Phil?
Pretty good. Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Do you have any questions for me? Do you have any questions for tonight?
You said that Jacob he didn't ask his parents questions about what he should do. He consulted Hashem, I believe, right?
That's correct.
But he did ask Rachel's father for her hand, though, right? In marriage.
Yes, he did.
Okay. So he, even though it wasn't his parent, it was a parent that he did ask permission for.
But first he asked Hashem if it was right for him. First he asked Hashem if it was right for him to marry her.
Or to marry Rachel.
Right.
He didn't have that opportunity for Leah.
He was fooled about Leah, but actually he knew that was going to happen too. But
yeah.
Malka.
Yeah. I mean, I always admired him, period, because I felt like he was doing more or less what Hashem wanted. I've sort of felt bad for Leah, but...
Well, she felt bad for herself until she learned otherwise.
Yeah, until she just also really just had to rely upon Hashem for love because she wasn't getting it from Jacob's, right?
No, Jacob loved her. He was just initially had more affinity with Rachel, but he loved her.
Yeah, that's true. He did. Do you believe that he showed her the type of love that he showed for Leah? I mean, for Rachel?
Rachel motivated him to change and grow. Once he had reached a level that she could no longer help him, that's when she passed away in the childbirth. Leah took over and continued to help him grow. So your question you're asking is, each person loves another person relative to where the two of them are spiritually. So the question can never be that he loved Rachel the same way he loved Leah, or he loved Leah the same way he loved Rachel, because it was relative to the two souls involved. But he loved both of them. And you don't compare love.
Okay.
Love just is.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's clear.
Mark, I believe you came on. Do you have any questions?
No, sir. I'm just going to listen. I'm dealing with some allergies.
Me too. That's what's the gift of aggravation. That's what that is.
The gift of aggravation? Is that what that is?
Yeah, when your nose leaks forever, that's the gift of aggravation.
Mm-hmm.
You can overcome it.
Hanad?
Yes.
I have a question that a friend of mine that we met together today, this afternoon, she asked me from another person that gave us the statement that how could Abraham talk to his father and his son, and what language were they doing it? If their Hebrew supposedly was not a language by the time. That was kind of weird.
No, they always spoke Hebrew. The whole world prior to the Tower of Babel spoke Hebrew. Just like communication on the spiritual realm is in Hebrew, based on the Hebrew letters as metaphors for the energies that they represent. But once the Tower of Babel took place, which Abraham was involved with, but Abraham lived in the generation of the Tower of Babel. So he kept the Hebrew language for what was to become his nation, and these 70 nations each got or learned another language that was their own. And nobody could talk to anybody else. So I'm not sure what the question is the person was asking. What language did Abraham speak? Abraham spoke Hebrew always.
Yeah, what he said is that he's just like historian. He likes to, you know, to look at history and stuff like that. And this guy said that back in the time of Abraham, there was a different language, which I think it was called Dian or something like that. I mean, this guy caught everybody out of guard, you know, because, it was a Shabbat table and he was like, you know, very smart, YouTube, I believe.
I've heard the story. What you're dealing with, there's a practical knowledge that comes through the Kabbalah, and that's based on the intuitive and the meditative connections that the sages and the Kabbalists have made. And then there is a academic study that tries to prove or disprove, based not on the search for truth, but on the search for an agenda. Even in archaeology, the individuals provide a hypothesis, and then they go out and try and prove that hypothesis by virtue of the artifacts that they find. So you will constantly be presented with truth quote unquote truth based on academic hypotheses that people claim to have proven, but they started out not with a search for truth, they started out to prove the hypothesis. And the way consciousness works, if that's what your desire is, that's what you're going to see. And people then ignore other facts that contradict the hypothesis they're trying to prove. So only when you come from a place of, I want to know the truth, because I want to know Hashem, that you are willing to look at all of the different facts. And then you can arrive at a valid conclusion. So when it comes to the languages, the academics say that Hebrew was not the language that they spoke. The Kabbalists say it is. And the Kabbalists use gematria to establish that, because the gematria of the words or the phrase holy tongue, or the gematria of one language in the Tower of Babel story, is the same gematria as holy language. And if you ask anybody, the holy language has always been Hebrew. So that is where the information comes that Abraham spoke Hebrew. The whole world spoke one language is the phrase, I'm paraphrasing, but that's the essence of the Tower of Babel story. The whole world spoke one language. They tried to go to war with God. They tried they didn't like what God was doing in the world. They wanted to be a God. And so they fought with God. And God saw the unity of humanity and said, this is a good thing. We know this is a good thing. This is what I want them to do. But they're not doing it for the right reasons. So he dispersed them around the world and introduced the 70 languages. And that's where they developed the beginning of the nations. That's what the Tower of Babel story teaches us. The academics don't follow that. They never found a tower, so they don't think it happened. It doesn't fit their model of how the world they want it to be from the past. And the lesson for us is to always realize everyone has an agenda. Everyone has a hypothesis that they feel is right. And then they go about the world trying to prove that their hypothesis is right. And it's easy to become. Each of us, even though we're searching for truth, each of us has an individual agenda, an hypothesis of what is truth. And how I see the world, how I view the world, my truth is different than your truth. Because you see the world through different eyes, with different consciousness, different life experiences. And all of this creates an agenda. And the lesson to learn is to be aware of what is your agenda so that you don't ignore those facts that contradict your hypothesis, your agenda. I hope I've been clear in my explanation and my discussion.
Yeah, and I'm agree with you about it. And there was another thing that we were discussing about it. It's when the Jews started to be called Jews, a Jewish religion or Jewish, because before Jacob, I guess there was not a Jewish people, because Judah, which I think is coming from Jewish people, is coming from Judah, was even born.
Well, the Jews come out of the tribe of Judah, who is one of the 12 tribes of the children of Jacob, the children of Israel. So I'm not sure on what is the discussion.
Yeah, the discussion is what about people before Judah? What were they called? Not they were not Jewish because Judah was not born. So are they the same descendants? I believe so. But what were they called before being called Jewish?
They were called the tribe of Judah. They were one of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 10 tribes lived in one nation, one country, and 2 tribes lived in the other. 10 tribes lived in what was called the nation of Ephraim. It was also called the nation of Israel in the Bible. The 2 tribes lived around Jerusalem. The 2 tribes were the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin. Among both of those 2 countries, for lack of a better description, there were the Kohanim and the Levites, who had cities among those territories. So that you had Levites and you had Kohanim, which the Kohanim came out of the tribe of Levi. So in essence, you had the 10 tribes of the north, the 2 tribes around Jerusalem, and the first great loss was the 10 tribes were conquered by the Assyrians and dispersed into exile. And up till now, they have not returned from exile. They are referred to as the 10 lost tribes. And the prophecies are that they will return. The 2 tribes, Benjamin and Judah, became known as the Jews approximately 70 or 90 years later, after the 10 tribes went into exile. The first temple was destroyed, and the 2 tribes, which were all called Jews, were taken into Babylonia, into exile. So whatever the discussion is, if the way you're reflecting it to us, they're not recognizing what the Book of Prophets tells us, the Book of Kings, and the Book of Chronicles. They're just totally not ignoring it. And that's very normal, because very few people study the Book of the way the Jewish people study now. It's all in the Talmud. In the past, the children were taught Chumash from the ages of 3 years old to 6 years old.
What are they called?
From six, They were taught the five books of Moses from the age of 3 to the age of 6.
Okay.
Then from the age of 6 to the age of 9, they were taught the book of prophets. And from 9 to 12, they were taught the writings and the beginning of the Mishnah. And then after they became bar mitzvah at 13, they started to learn Gemara. And then they never ever looked back on the others, although the others are needed to understand the teachings of the Gemara. But today, even in the yeshivas, they almost never talk about the stories of the Torah. They never talk about the five books, and rarely do they ever mention the prophets. The Christians, on the other hand, constantly study the New Testament as well as the Book of Prophets. But almost rarely do they delve into the in depth into the five books of Moses. So you have people studying different components of the Bible, again with different agendas.
Hello, this is Martha.
Yes. Go ahead, Martha.
My studies are my knowledge of what Abraham was called. They were called Ephraims, which is or Hebrews, which means I think what I understand is that they crossed over. I think
that's
back.
Correct. That's the meaning of that's the meaning of these rings.
Yeah.
The question is, they crossed over. The question is, what did they cross over? And in the physical level, they crossed over the Euphrates River.
Mm-hmm.
He traveled from east of the Euphrates River to west to get to Israel, which was the land that Hashem showed him.
Yeah.
That's why they were called Ivri, those who crossed over.
I think that's what Jasmine is maybe trying to get to. I think that's what they were called. At that point, they weren't called Jews or Israel or Israelites. They were called Ephraim, who crossed over. That's my understanding.
That's correct. That is correct. They were called that, and only until Jacob created the 12 tribes through the four wives do you have this. And then you had to go through the dispersion of the 10 tribes, so the two tribes that came back to rebuild the second temple were generally considered Jews, because they all came from the tribe of Judah, except for a very small amount that were in the tribe of Benjamin, because if you read in the book of Judges, the tribe of Benjamin was all but destroyed
mm-hmm.
by the 11 other tribes.
So Judah absorbed Benjamin, basically.
I didn't quite hear what you said, but I'm sure it was correct.
I think with Benjamin being such that they were almost destroyed because of what had happened in their community, that Judah absorbed Benjamin, although they're still called Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin. But they were so small.
The tribe of Benjamin was absorbed into the tribe of Judah. That's correct.
Right. Right. Jasmine, does that answer your question?
Thank you. I have some history that I can tell my friend that asked me about it to tell.
Right. And Thank you so much. Israel didn't come into play until Jacob's name was changed to Israel. You know, he was called Jacob at some point, and he was called Israel, you know, at some time. So that's when the Israelites came into being, is when Jacob's name was changed.
And his name was changed after the wrestling with the man or the angel, whichever it is, depending on your point of view.
Right. So they weren't always called Jews. They had different names throughout the spiritual journey that they were on.
And as we know from Kabbalah, when the name changes, it's an indication of reaching a different level of consciousness.
Right, right. That's correct. I have a question. Is there a book or a website we can get the gematria, you know, of the letters when you do numerical calculations on the letters? Is there a book or a website to get the gematria?
Yes, it's called yeshem.com.
Okay.
If you look in the red bar, where you're used to clicking on revealed wisdom, one of those ones says
it. Okay.
Go ahead.
Is there also a book? I know when, you know, we study on the way to work, we study on the way back from work, you know, and so it would be, if there's like a little handbook, a little something that you can look it up right then and there, is that available anywhere, or is it just on a website?
There are books that have the gematria of all of the words in the Bible. But they usually only do the one gematria, the normal, regular gematria. And there's 10 levels of gematria. So I'm not sure what you're referring to or what you're trying to accomplish. If you just want to know the one letter of gematria, you just print out that list of letters and numbers associated with each letter, and whenever you're dealing with gematria for any given word, you look it up. You carry those gematria with you until it becomes second nature, like it has with me at this point.
Right, and that's kind of what I'm actually moving forward with that phase.
Yeah. Copy and paste it, or just print out a certain section of the web page once you study it, because on the Yeshem website you have, I don't know, I think I had 6 or 7 of the 10 different levels of gematria.
Okay,
and I
great.
Gave you all the numbers in each letter.
Right. Okay. I'll do that. So I'll just make me a little quick reference booklet to carry around.
Right.
Okay. I think I have a statement. I guess what I'm just kind of rolling around in my mind that I kind of see. Don't know if there's any significance to this statement I'm going to make. And it may not mean a thing. But what I've noticed that the longhand writing out words, like writing out a whole word, you know, like lots of love or something like that. What I've seen in the technology side, when you do a tweet or when you do a text, it seems like we're going back to just a three-letter word, like lots of love, they'll do LOL, you know. And then they have the emojis, you know, the signs, you know. And I'm thinking,
right.
Are we reverting back to a I think it's called the root word, shorish, you know?
Yes.
It's like the language is reverting back to a simpler style, a simpler like in the Hebrew words or Hebrew letters. You know, you have a three-letter root word in the Hebrew language. And I'm thinking, is this happening, or is this something that I'm just kind of making it up in my own mind or something?
To answer your question, I'm going to give you a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a writer, a modern writer called Saul Bellows. He basically, I think he wrote, or Herman Wouk, they wrote these long novels about the Second World War. And they wrote with the consciousness of whatever they wrote it with. And the critics loved it. The people loved it. Everybody bought millions of copies. And every time somebody writes a report, a review of the book, they indicate that when they read the book, this is what they think the author said and why he said it and what he was saying. And it's the reviewer's understanding of what the author said. And then they go back to the author who's still alive, and they say, is that what you meant? And the authors always start laughing, because they don't remember what they meant. They wrote the book because it was supposed to be written. And now you have reviewers coming and saying, this is what he meant. When sometimes there's no logical reason, there's no justification for what is written. So the answer to your question is, are you being incorrect? No, because we have a premise in a statement from the sages that whatever happens to the children first happened to the fathers. Does it apply to what you just described? The fathers had to go through, our ancestors had to go through, and they had the development of the three letters. They had the development of pictures. And it communicates. They communicated. But then we developed alphabets. Then we developed the matriot. Then we developed other forms or enhanced forms of communication. And now, are we reverting back to where we were before? What's happening in the children's life in our generation, is it manifesting what took place in the father's generations? You say yes, and you're right. Someone else will say no, and they're right. Do I think you're right? Yes. But could I also say I think you're wrong? Yes. Because you can point to many examples of the three-letter root, like LOL. But you can also point to many other that are not three letters. They're four letters, or two letters, or you know, different signs. There's so many different, you know, you can take into account your perceptions, your facts as you see them that fit your hypothesis.
Okay.
But many of the facts, if you look at the kids' texting shortcuts, they're doing it because the letters are close together. They're doing it because it lets them text faster. Or maybe they're not. I don't know. I don't know what their consciousness is. I don't know how it develops. But all of a sudden it develops, and now we're justifying that that's what it's the meaning of it. And maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. I hope I'm clear in the metaphor and in the discussion. And yes, Martha, keep it up. I don't mean to dissuade you from doing that, because it's interesting and it's valid. But there's also the first person who said LOL, did he mean laughing out loud, or did he mean lots of luck?
Right. They could have several meanings, whoever that person starts, whoever's
correct
using those three, yeah.
So unless you're the person who put it down, and then you wrote down, I put this down and it means this, people took it as their own, what it meant to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it grows, becomes something. It's not happenstance, it's all part of the plan of creation. It's not coincidental, and in that sense, there has to be a plan behind it. But if the plan behind it is the mind of God, can we really understand it? Any other questions or comments? You all have a beautiful evening.
Thank you, Hannah.
Did I miss prayer? You prayed first thing?
I'm sorry?
Did you pray when we opened?
No. I don't pray on the questions and answers. I don't do a L'shem Yichud.
Oh. Okay. Well, you have a good, healthy sleep.
Thank you so much. As well.
Shalom.
Shalom to all.
Shalom.
All
right.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Come on.